You're listening to Dexter Gordon on tenor sax with Scrapple from the Apple, Bud Powell on piano, Pierre Michelot on bass, Kenny Clark on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, August the 8th, and in the second half of our program, we'll take a look at how the Obama administration has been coddling banksters, giving these bailed-out institutions every incentive to continue to break the law and force the government and consumers to settle for it. But first, our guest Joel Kotkin warns that we face as much of a threat from corporations as from the government with respect to the invasion of our privacy through the collection of big data about us. Joel Kotkin, for more than 30 years, has been tracking the footprint of power and influence globally. He is the Distinguished Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University in Orange, California, a contributing editor to the City Journal in New York, a senior visiting fellow at the Civil Service College in Singapore, and a fellow at the National Chamber Foundation. He consults widely on what the future would look like for not just countries, but for the world. His most recent book, The Next 100 Million, America in 2050, explores how the nation will evolve in the next four decades. He also has written recently The New Geography, How the Digital Revolution is Reshaping the American Landscape. And he also had written, what else did you write, Joel? I think I just lost it. But anyway, he's with us. Thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Oh, yes, there we go. Tribes. I forgot to mention Tribes. This is a very important work, and I highly recommend it. How Race, Religion, and Identity Determine Success in the New Global Economy. Well, obviously, you're not doing very much. You're just sitting around doing nothing, contemplating your navel. You're not doing very much at all.
No. I wish. I thought it was very interesting. I've been starting to do some more research on this topic because obviously the takeover of the Washington Post by Bezos was sort of illustrative of a bigger trend that's going on.
Could you talk about the significance of that, since Jeff Bezos, the founder and owner of Amazon, spent all of about 1% of his personal wealth to acquire the Washington Post at a mere $250 million?
Right, and I should say I worked for the Washington Post for a long time, certainly not for the last 15 years, but I did sort of come up in that institution. What I think is happening, if you look at also Chris Hughes, one of the Facebook founders, now controls the New Republic, what you have is something that, we have to look in historical terms. We really haven't seen this kind of accumulation of wealth in very specific industries with such enormous percentages of these companies owned by their founding team, really since the turn of the 20th century. And we have to start thinking about, is there too much power and too much wealth concentrated in very, very few hands? And although many of them may be called progressives, and they may be so in, let's say, social attitudes, this kind of concentration of wealth will inevitably lead to arrogance. It will inevitably lead to attempts to sort of rig the game even further in their favor. And this is just human nature. I'm not saying these are bad people per se, but when the ability exists to make enormous amounts of money, people generally take it.
But there's something interesting, too, that I find in the venturing of the tech billionaires, the super tech people, in acquiring what I would call reservoirs of knowledge and information. Bill Gates has been acquiring libraries, buying up entire libraries of things and hoarding information. It suggests to me a kind of really dark potential here for knowledge literally to be a currency, a form of currency, that if you want to know something, you really will have to pay for it, so that knowledge becomes itself a commodity.
Right.
Am I going way off track on that?
No, I think it's happening now in a different way, which is we're not necessarily paying for the information, but in order to get to the information, we have to go through their system, and then they use that data and sell that data to, well, they give it to the government and they sell it to companies, and they have these enormous reservoirs of information. Now, Jaron Lanier, in his book, Who Owns the Future, raises a very interesting issue. Lanier says, well, maybe we ought to do is make it much easier for people to say, okay, you have access to my information, you have to pay me something, so that not all the profits goes to a very, very small number of people. And I think that we really have to start looking at, and I would argue from a conservative point of view, that these kinds of concentrations of wealth suddenly by people who are very often very young, who all of a sudden have $30 billion and and they're 40 years old, is something that is a threat to the basic democracy. I think that the founding fathers would themselves be concerned about this.
Well, that's one way. The flip side of that coin, arguing same on the same conservative side, people would say, well, that's the beauty of America, that people should reap the rewards for their genius and their hard work and their innovation.
Well, except we have to ask ourselves some pretty hard questions. If you look at the history of Silicon Valley, and I don't prescribe to the, you didn't build that idea, but I do think it's important to understand that Silicon Valley and the Internet were built by the taxpayers of the United States. And I, as one friend of mine has suggested, historian Michael Lind, maybe companies like Google that have mined this and made a fortune need to be regulated the way we regulate electrical utilities. These have become utilities. They have, when you have 80-90% market share, you're no longer a competitive business. So somebody could come up with a very, very good idea to challenge Facebook or Google, but it would be almost impossible to make that happen. And of course, what happens very often is these companies will then get acquired, which is actually the reason they were started in the first place. So I think we have to start asking ourselves, is there such a accumulation, not just of wealth, but what's scariest is of information, the ability to control vast amounts of information and to then use that information to sell it to various companies is, I think, a very frightening prospect that we have to have a discussion about.
But, people have a view that, again, the owners don't look like bad guys. They look like regular guys. Jeff Bezos doesn't look like a bad guy at all. He's a smart guy, and that's why he is a billionaire. He has come up with a winning formula, and others similarly have done the same thing. Zuckerberg has done the same thing. What, therefore, is the fear that these people who are, they're cast in the mold of liberals and even, in some cases, progressives. What is the problem? Why would anybody think on the dark side of that and say, well, these people could run off and do their own thing, and next thing you know, in fact, I'll tell you the truth, it is exactly the same thing I had said about Julian Assange. What serves as the system of checks and balances, where you have an industry that frankly just kind of created itself and was so ahead of where everybody else was? They literally are the pioneers of their own industry, the pioneers of their own knowledge, and there isn't really any, I don't know the world of technology that well, but I would venture to say the world of competition in their world, there are few among equals. They don't seem to have a vast population of people where they are, both in terms of the knowledge and in terms of the commercialization of their knowledge and the success of it and the money that it has reaped?
Well, I mean, first of all, we have to understand that, that you know, people who become very wealthy in these kind of epochal, you know, economic shifts are very smart people. You know, they in the turn of the last century, they may have been, you know, a little bit less educated, and they may have been more mechanics than engineers, let's say. But they were very smart people, and they made huge improvements in the lives of people. But they also had a tremendous abuse of power, and you know, they were buying and selling senators like they were going out of style. And we see the same thing beginning to emerge with the Silicon Valley people buying the means of communication. I think they are going to eventually end up buying, you know, Hollywood studios. I think that's probably only a matter of time now. And gathering so much political power, they can anoint. I mean, like they anointed, let's say, Cory Booker in New Jersey. They have this ability to do this, and because they have relatively good image, they can get away with things that the oil company guys could never get away with. Even though, oddly enough, the oil and auto industries, for instance, are much more competitive and have much more competition than a large part of the tech industry. I mean, nobody in the oil industry has anything close to, you know, 80% market share. And there's always, obviously, a lot of foreign competition elsewhere. But you now have a group of people who have almost unlimited amounts of money and have gotten that money early in their lives. So they can, if you will, you know, cause a lot of havoc down the road. And, you know, frankly, I would say to the more left of the center, they're in danger of becoming an adjunct of those people. And you know, I always found it ironic that the people at the Occupy movement, you know, were so concerned about Steve Jobs passing. I mean, it's sad when somebody passes, you know, early in life, obviously. But you know, Steve was, you know, as rapacious a entrepreneur as you'll ever find. And his, you know, his behavior mindset really is not any different than any other large corporate mogul. Money and power change people, even if on the outside, you know, they might wear blue jeans instead of a suit, and they might, you know, listen to progressive rock music instead of, you know, Frank Sinatra. But, you know, but ultimately that concentration of power is going to affect how they view themselves, how they view others, and how they exercise that power.
How are corporations essentially to be feared as much as the NSA with respect to the invasion of privacy?
Well, the corporation's interested in a lot more detail and data about everyone than you know, you would like, you know, than let's say a small, you know, than the government is. I mean, the government isn't going to find what I'm doing very interesting, I don't think. But you know what? The retailers may find it interesting. The travel agencies might find it interesting. The you know, trying to find out more and more about what I do, what my family does, where we live, that does have an interest to them, and that is more likely to create a situation where people are you know, being in a sense targeted by these companies, and then they will be selling that information out. I think that's a very real prospect. It's very difficult to get, let's say, Facebook or some of these other sites to turn off the availability of your information. Consumer Reports has gone into that in quite a bit of detail. It is not in their interest that we get control over our own data. I personally have tried as much as possible to keep things on my own server so that, you know, it's not easy to access my information.
But then, I mean, you're kind of an exception. Most people won't be able to have their own server.
Right. Well, that's true. And I think ultimately somebody who guarantees people's security and privacy could create a very, very nice business doing that. We had no idea, and this, you know, I'm not condoning what Snowden did, but I think it is important to note that we had no idea what the federal government was doing, and I think we only have a vague idea of what these tech companies are now doing in terms of the use of their technology to essentially invade our privacy. I think it's a serious issue.
So, in this sphere, should the average consumer of technology or the user of technology become more entrepreneurial and say, well, my information is worth something, and find ways to commodify it? If my information is worth something to you, I insist on being paid.
Well, I, you know, that I don't know how you would go about doing it, but it would certainly be an interesting attempt. I think it would have to be among users. I think one of the major things I think is to look for you know, different you know, servers, you know, so you're not locked on the Apple or Microsoft system any more than you absolutely have to be. Again, I think that the technology is becoming increasingly intrusive, and we I also think we have to tell our friends and ourselves, and most particularly our children, that what they put on Facebook is not, for instance, is not private. You know, when you set out a tweet, you know, you're letting everyone know about what's going on. I had students who actually said that they found out that their boyfriend had broken up with them on Facebook. I think we have to begin to understand that that our privacy and there, is important, and that the separation of our lives from simply the internet is a is really essential, and it's particularly important for children.
Should consumers of technology and users of technology essentially use it or consume technology with the understanding that they give up certain rights to privacy simply or merely by using technology? Is that where we have to go?
Yes, we have to understand that these companies are, and I never expected to see it until we started seeing, you know, and again, Snowden played an important role, is, you know, we began to realize how much our data was being essentially handed over without our permission, and of course with no reason for anyone to suspect that we were engaged in terrorist activities, handed to the government and then handed to companies. The temptations of big data are so enormous, and frankly will lead to a lot of misleading conclusions, but that's a whole other conversation. But I think it will drive a desire on the part of these companies to become ever more obtrusive in terms of their involvement in politics, their involvement in business, and their involvement in media. And that's why the Bezos thing is so important.
Should it be the case that just as you know, technology is evolving, that along with the evolution of technology should be the formulation of tactics to be defensive consumers of information? People should know what the risks are in using certain types of technology.
Yes,
and
I think
the
so.
Risks also of, even if you don't use technology, technology is being used against you.
I think we definitely have to have a very serious conversation about this. You know, when Eric Schmidt at Google says, well, if you were doing something that you don't want people to know, you probably shouldn't have been doing it in the first place. Like, my response is, who the hell are you? You're telling me on what I thought was a privileged communication network that if I say the wrong thing, it, you know, it, if somebody, you know, takes advantage of that, it's my, you know, my tough luck. I think that we have to be very concerned about this, and I think we have to have a serious conversation. But the tech guys have been very smart. They figured that Republicans won't do anything that will increase government regulation, and they've bought off the Democrats. So they're, you know, who's going to challenge them? I don't think anyone.
Who should challenge them?
Well, you know, the public theoretically should challenge them. I think consumers' organizations should challenge them, but even they are, you know, in many ways very intimidated by, you know, the companies like Google. There doesn't seem to be a groundswell here. I think there is more of this going on in Europe. I think partially because they've been more closely exposed to sort of totalitarian systems, and therefore, you know, maybe like, you know, particularly in a place like Germany, you know, they're much more concerned about privacy rights there than they are in the U.S. as of now. But we have to have this discussion because we were talking about handing over enormous parts of our lives and our economy to a very small number of people. I mean, maybe 50 companies on the outside that are anywhere in the loop here.
Oh. You know, I bet you most people, I'm one of them, you would never think of the technology sector as being literally a monopoly. I mean, you assign these kinds of words and terms and images to, you know, other kinds of corporate entities, maybe the coal industry or the energy industry or the banking industry and so forth. But we just never see it this way because perhaps, and I think this is the devious part, we see the heads of these organizations, they're not hiding, they're very much in the news, and they look young and they look like reasonable people, but in fact, you know, they have been sharks. They have been really, really adept at manipulating their power, using it. It's here. We see how, ex-Governor Richardson himself personally accompanied, I think it was Zuckerberg, was it, to China? Or to North Korea, sorry.
Yeah, no, it was Schmidt.
That's correct. To North Korea, you know, we see the power that they have. They are literally entities unto themselves, and there's very little that they can't do.
Well, in the article I did on this for the Daily Beast, one of the things that was really shocking is actually there's much more competition in the energy industry and the auto industry than in tech. I mean, the tech companies have, you know, in their areas, whether let's say Google search or Facebook social media or Microsoft and Apple and operating systems. I mean, you at best have two or three competitors at best. And that also these companies have very high degrees of ownership by a small group of people. The president of Exxon just doesn't control very much of Exxon. It's just, you know, the company's been around for a long time and lots of people own shares in it. These companies, you could have very often 30-40% of the company still controlled by the founder. And these companies are worth billions and billions of dollars. And that type of money buys you all sorts of things.
I want to ask you, you had said something early on in this conversation about these companies literally being created by the people. What did you mean by that?
In terms of?
The wealth and the entity that should be coming into full bloom.
Right. Well, you know, for instance, the Internet. The Internet was created basically by the Defense Department. The semiconductor industry was essentially nurtured by NASA and the Defense Department. The engineering and technical workforce was largely educated with, you know, considerable amount of support by the taxpayer. So we have to say that that whole infrastructure has something to do with the public. You know, in other words, we have to think about the Internet as a public convenience. I think it should remain very open. I think it should remain something where, you know, your email to somebody else is not the subject of anyone else's interest but yours. And so I think we sometimes have the sense that these guys, in quote, invented the Internet or made these things happen. But in reality, they were able and fine, took advantage very nicely of the opportunity. But but we should recognize that the internet, like the roads, are the property of the public, and we should have some right to limit what these people can do in terms of A, controlling huge sectors of that internet economy, and certainly how they affect people's privacy rights. And I think this is a discussion that's worth having. I don't have all the answers to it, but I think that the failure of the political system to really deal with it, I think, is something of great concern. And it's interesting to me that where you tend to see the most concern is both on the right and the left of the spectrum. In other words, Ron Wyden or someone like that, or some of the people like Rand Paul, who are at least willing to say, hey, there's something wrong with this. But most of the mainstream politicians in both parties are more than happy to go along with, with these people, because they have lots of money. They, unlike, let's say, the oil companies, they have a relatively good public image.
Well, this is an extraordinarily illuminating point. And I would want to ask you, if you could forecast where this conversation, it might not likely occur here. Is there any place in the world where this conversation is likely to occur?
I think Europe is probably going to be the place where it's going to hit, because these companies, although they obviously have European operations, are not European companies, and therefore make easier targets than if they were European companies. And again, I think Europe has, and I'm not a great fan of Europe per se, but I would say Europe has had the experience of Big Brother up close, and they are a little bit more concerned about the potential of this enormous amount of data, either legally or illegally, being put into the hands of people who can profit from it, or can use it to violate our privacy. But I want to add just one last thing, which is we have to teach our kids, and we have to think ourselves about how to protect our privacy. I think one of the great issues today is that people, in this sort of celebrity-crazed world, where people with absolutely no identifiable talent become the, everyday gossip, and the dream of somebody is to have their, 15 minutes of fame. We're very vulnerable to that, and our young people in particular are really vulnerable to that. That they feel they have to post everything on Facebook, and they have to say every thought that they've had, not recognizing that they're going to have, those thoughts are now out in the public. We need to, again, consider the sanctity of our privacy, and most importantly, our family privacy. So, I always feel that is a major concern of mine, is not to let, people have this sense that, that your life is an open book. It shouldn't be an open book. Your life is your own, and you should work to make sure that nobody, including these tech companies, have the right to hijack your information for their own benefit.
Well, thank you so much for bringing this thought to us today. It's a very profound thought, and I hope it causes people to do some thinking about the world of technology in our lives. So thank you so much for this wonderful time spent with you today, Joel.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye. Bye-bye. We'll take a break and come back. We'll talk a bit about the banksters next. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. And the U.S. government is suing the country's second largest bank over investor losses that is said were suffered because the second largest bank in the United States, that's Bank of America, the red, white, and blue bank, that's them. They sold mortgages that were described by a bank official as toxic waste. And the lawsuit filed by the Justice Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission. The lawsuits are two separate actions that are saying that the Bank of America actually knew that these mortgages were toxic, if you will, that they were going to cause losses to investors, and so the bank was engaging in fraud. Ooh, I'm sure this is news. It's not like we haven't heard the Bank of America often enough associated with breaking the law and getting away with it. And here we have the Obama administration, supposedly with a very invigorated Securities and Exchange Commission, with the appointment of a former federal prosecutor, Mary Jo White, from Manhattan, the Southern District in Manhattan, who is now heading up the SEC and has this beady eye for, you know, sniffing out wrongdoing and punishing it severely. And the Justice Department, the reinvigorated Justice Department that is going to get out there and get us some justice. And what do they both do, these two agencies? They are suing, but not on criminal grounds, interestingly enough. They're suing Bank of America on civil grounds, which is to say, right from the start, they're sending the signal, we could settle this. Just pay the fine. Pay the fine on your way out. It's like traffic court in New York. You know, they don't care what your argument is. The judge just says, hey, pay your fine on the way out. And that's it. $850 million in order, in fact, both the Justice Department and the SEC are stand-ins for investors. So two things there that rub me the wrong way. The Justice Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission, both under the jurisdiction of the Obama administration, are quick to defend the losses of investors, not the losses of consumers, to what it is that the Bank of America has been doing to just basic depositors in the bank. And they're doing so on a civil level, not a criminal level. This is a bank that was among the banksters that got $45 billion in federal bailout money, and in fact, recently reported record profits. Bank of America has been cited so often as ridiculous in the ways it has broken the law. And the period that they're trying to recoup the money from, that period is the same period where the federal government recognizes was a period that people who managed to accumulate some kind of wealth, and for most working people it's a house, lost it. According to the Federal Reserve of St. Louis, they said that $16 trillion in wealth disappeared from 2007 to 2009, and only about 45% of it had been recouped. But the 45% that has been recouped are not regular, ordinary people, but the wealthy investors. So the administration is actually contributing to fraud and crime by suggesting that the Bank of America should not be held criminally responsible, criminally liable, but civilly, building in from the word go an exit, a way out, to say, well, look, it's going to be about settling. If we settle, we'll be all right. Bank of America posted a 70 percent profit. Okay? 70% profit in the last quarter. A profit of $2.1 billion a year ago. And even as they posted that level of profit, they were cutting back on jobs. They cut almost 18,000 plus jobs. So they're cutting back on jobs. They got a lot of money from the federal government. That's it, got taxpayer money. They're cutting the jobs. They're cutting down their operations, slimming down their operations because they don't want to maintain full-fledged banks anymore. They want to automate everything. They don't really want to have a building for you to come into. They want everything to be basically cut down to a little cubicle where you can pull up and press some numbers, or you could do it from your computer or from your smartphone. And they are getting away with this. Now, what really drives me mad about these kinds of things is that the Bank of America is a repeat offender. This is the country's largest, second largest bank, a repeat offender in the area of committing fraud. And despite the fact that the SEC agrees that it's committing fraud, despite the fact that it has been convicted, it has admitted to committing fraud, they are still saying the Justice Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission are still saying, let's sit down and reason this together. And essentially, you know, it's going to be involving a fine. A couple of hundred million here, maybe bank will laugh and gladly pay that check because they've reaped the rewards already. But while they're doing that, this is what is so offensive, is that ordinary people, these mortgages, ordinary people have lost their homes. The bank is not extending any loans to these people, nor is the bank giving or adhering to the law in terms of giving people who are in trouble, facing foreclosure, working with them to come up with some kind of formula where they can still retain ownership of their homes. And these are working folk for the most part. The wealthy, they don't have these kinds of troubles. It's the working folks and the people who have difficulty finding and maintaining a job that would support them with a living wage. So the Obama administration, in my view, is coddling and creating banksterism at a level that we haven't seen in a long, long time. These banks, Bank of America being a flagrant example, they are repeat offenders breaking the law. And they're calling the shots. They're doing whatever they want to do. And if caught, they can count on the sympathies of this administration that would provide a good way out. It would hurt just a little bit, but they could get over it because they've made more than enough profit with the assistance of taxpayer dollars. And that is what this administration says passes for the law and justice. And I think it is obscene. It's just obscene. So, the next time you want to make your deposit at Bank of America, you want to think about what it is you're doing. You may want to rethink your banking choices. We have a little bit of time to take your calls at 888-874-4888. Let's see if you have an interest in having a chat today. What do you think about what Kotkin had said about the technical industry, that the technological giants, and what is shaping up to be a huge area of concern in the way that they are conducting business and the concentration of power that they have, power and money, and those things, when combined, always invite trouble. And we see already how the administration itself has been basically influenced by the power and money of the tech industry. Zuckerberg has revived his campaign over immigration reform, and Mr. Bezos has purchased the Washington Post. So they're moving in these circles of power and influencing of choice and influencing people's minds. That's a huge thing. It's not to be dismissed at all. And when you look at the trajectory, you see they're acquiring this relatively young in life, which means they're going to be around for quite a while to influence the outcome of things. And we have to watch that. And you say to yourself, well, look, guys, I mean, they don't look so harmful. But then you look, they didn't get rich being nice guys either. You know, these are ruthless business people, and they operate no differently from the oil industry or the energy industry or the banking industry. It's all about money, capturing the market, almost completely capturing the market, and that's the way they operate. So I'll take your calls at 888-874-4888. We have a few minutes to go, and we can certainly have a little chat. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings, Utrecht. Am I being heard?
Yes, you are. Hello.
Yes, Utrecht. This is Sarah calling in from Dallas.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Your guest that you had on there, he was very informative with what's going on with the internet as well as with intelligence, which is one reason why I am not on social media, because, as you said, this is a way of tracking you, as well as I was watching a clip on one of these technology shows where they're showing all of these smart TVs now, how they have cameras in them and how they can turn those cameras on and they can view you in your home, as the same goes for these smartphones who are smarter than the people who are using them. Where technology is, all of it is to keep track, in addition to the closed-circuit TVs that we have all over the place. But I'm digressing from what I was talking on with the intelligence of what's going on. In Utrecht, electronic communication is where it is, at, as you said, with the selling of information, because they have to have a way of controlling people, and the mind is the most important thing that they need to control. So if they can give you all of these distractions and all of these toys in order to get you going off, whereby they can manipulate you and control you, because we seem to forget that the human body is electrodes. It's what we are made up with. And these things that are out here, they are manipulating the electrical current in order to control individuals. Some of us who are very weak, we can be controlled, because we can see we get distracted with all of the Bradley Mannings, the Assange, and the Snowden machinations that's going on, and we get sucked in and we get pulled along with it, and we keep saying, well, oh, the country is doing this. Well, when we, as you said, we all along, as people of color, or black people in particular, we've always known that we've always been under surveillance in this country, from the time the first Africans were tossed in the bottom of a boat and pulled across the Atlantic. These people know that they always had to keep an eye on us because of what was done to us, and there's a possibility that we are going to rebel or retaliate. So people who are black and walking around here thinking that they have escaped it, that they have somehow made it because they went to Ivy League schools and they're CEOs and CFOs, and therefore they're now part of the club, they're operating under an illusion. And that illusion, that blanket, is about to be snatched away from them because, as you said, this country is third world. The United States has been in third world status. These people are operating as if though they like to put everybody into this, into these different worlds. I don't know who's the first and who's the second world, but the United States like to put themselves as being in a first world status, and everybody else is in third world. This country's in third world status. Anytime you have to... Sorry, ma'am.
No, I just wanted to just say to you that at this point, technology makes no real distinction between who is who.
Exactly.
Technology is about
information.
The control of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is a likely target. And so,
exactly.
You know, the tendency, and it really does amaze me too, the tendency that people have to think that, you know, everybody needs to know everything about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're making it so easy for people to really know your business.
Exactly, Utrecht. We are a pay tracking device. We walk around here with these cell phones or credit cards or a driver's license. All of these things have tracking information in them. You are paying a cell phone company in order for them to make it easier for them to keep track of you. So therefore, they don't have to put the little man out there in a little unmarked car to sit across the street and watch you. They have your cell phone.
The technology has, that's what I said, the technology has grown in accordance with the appetites of those in control to control others. Thank you, Sarah, for your call today.
You're welcome, Utrecht.
Thank you. Just got a note from someone who said, just a quick note that I closed my accounts at Bank of America and they didn't make it easy. First, I had to discover that I had to make the request in writing to an office in Florida, and then it would take at least 2 weeks to be processed. It took me over a month to complete the process. So the attitude being, once they have you, they're not interested in letting you go. Even if you want to go, they're not interested in letting you go. They're going to make it very easy, very difficult for you to say goodbye because, of course, it's all about money. Every person represents revenue, and some charge is, they're going to get some way to charge you for something. You know, just even to keep your account, they're going to make you have a minimum in that bank account, or they're going to you're going to pay fees for using your card. You know, it's ridiculous. So it is another reminder, I think, that we have to look at alternatives to the way we function and selectively decide where and when we enter this whole thing. You know, Gary talks a lot about the grid. It is part of the grid. You know, do you want to be part of that organized, highly organized system of control where your information is actually a commodity to these companies and corporations, and they manipulate the information to their advantage. And every day, without us knowing anything, we're being sold. So I want to thank you for being with me today. And, of course, we'll come back to each other tomorrow at 1 o'clock. I wanted to take a role in promoting the program and certainly promoting PRN.FM. We have to grow the station, and it's a good way to do it by word of mouth. Tell the people in your circle that this is a place that they ought to check out and will soon be their alternative to the information the disinformation out there. So thanks so much for being with me today. We'll get each other again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Take care.